Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk again about the Kingdom of God. We're in about the 19th session on Resist Not Evil, a very misunderstood quote from the Bible. Matthew 5:39 says, "But I say unto you, that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also." What he's talking about is not what we see Gandhi talking about when he says a good person will resist an evil system with his whole soul. Disobedience of the laws of an evil state is therefore a duty. Now he's talking about disobedience, and he's actually talking about setting yourself against something, but is he talking about disobedience? And we're using these terms, disobedience. We're talking about an evil system. What makes a system evil? What system is evil? What system is not evil? Is a system even capable of being evil? People can do evil, but systems are not necessarily evil. Communism would work in heaven because all the people would be good. Democracies would work in heaven, where all the people would be good and choose wisely. But all people are not in heaven. All people are not seeking the kingdom of heaven. All people are not seeking the righteousness of Christ. So if you pool your rights in a democracy, you may be creating the possibility of evil, because you have entered into a democracy with those who choose to do evil. Because that's where the evil comes from people who make the choice to do evil or make the choice not to do good, and therefore evil results. So people are evil. Systems are not evil, but systems will lend themselves to giving power to evil. When the people of Israel chose to have a king to reign over them, which they had a right to make that choice, but they were making that choice because they had already rejected God, that he should not reign over them. Therefore, they saw a need to have somebody reign over them and set things right. Unfortunately, in order to have somebody to set things right, you had to give them the power to set things right. And when you gave them the power to set things right, power corrupted them. Saul was corrupted. Nimrod was corrupted. Cain was corrupted. The king of Sodom and Gomorrah were corrupted by the power that men gave them. And the people were corrupted by the fact that they became slothful in the exercise of their responsibilities. They had turned their responsibilities over to somebody else and said, "You do it. You make things right. You tend to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. I just want to go over here and watch the ball game, or go sing in church, or go do my own thing." And when you make those decisions to give that power to somebody else to make decisions for you, you corrupt them, and then they will do evil. And then now you have a choice to obey their commands or not. I mean, you gave them the power to decide for you, and now you don't like the way they're deciding, so you want to take that power back. And in some situations, you certainly could, but it depends on how you have given them that power. Is it a revocable power? Have you given them the power to put you into debt? Because if they have gone into debt by your authority to give them the power to borrow against your future, then your future belongs to them or whoever it is they have borrowed from. And now you are a subject. And you can't just opt out, because you cannot opt out of debt. You must pay debt. You cannot discharge debt unless someone gives you the permission to discharge debt. What do I mean by discharge debt? Say, he's going to pay for me. This fellow is going to pay for me. So therefore, I don't owe you anymore. This person will owe you. Problem is that that person has to agree, and the person to whom the debt is owed must agree to pass the debt over to this other individual or group of individuals. So you may be bound by the circumstances by which you have given power to others. And of course, we constantly remind you the greatest destroyers of liberty are those who give gifts, gratuities, and benefits. One reason is because they weaken the people. Two, because soon they are borrowing against the future of the people in order to provide those benefits. And that's, of course, the way every nation has become in this world today. They all operate in the red. They all borrow against not only your future, but the future of your children. And your lasciviousness, your sloth, your avarice has cursed your children with debt. And you wave your fist at Congress and say, or Parliament, or whatever is running in your country as a government, you raise your fist and you say, they're not being fiscally responsible. But you still take the benefit. Who's being fiscally responsible? So some people say, oh, I don't want to be a part of such a system. And so they try to sneak out over the wall or under the fence and say, I don't want to be a part of this. I'm going to opt out. But how can you opt out? You're in debt. You are bound. What should have been for your welfare has become a snare. David told you this. Paul told you this. And it's through covetousness that you have been made merchandise. You now belong as surety for this debt. All of which is warned over and over again in both Old and New Testament. But your churches don't tell you that you're in a bondage worse than that was in Judea. Far worse. In every nation. And yet you go to your churches to do good or to feel good. Or you do a little good because that helps make you feel good. It makes you feel righteous. You shake your fists at the rulers you have chosen for yourself. God will not hear you. And this is what Jesus is talking about. Resist not evil. The word resist there is a Greek word. It's taken from a Greek word, which is enthistimi, which is actually two Greek words. One meaning to stand or establish something, and the other one means to establish it against something, because of something. Over against or opposite to something. When they say resist not evil, they're talking about do not pit yourself against the evil. That's how you make evil stronger. You meet evil on its terms. You don't want to do that. And so that's why he's saying resist not evil. Don't pick up the sword against the sword. There's another better armament. Now, I'm not saying don't defend yourself, don't defend others against unwarranted usurpations. You know, in the Declaration of Independence, it talks about why there was this so-called American Revolution. And it wasn't for the reason that most people think. But many of those reasons are listed off in the Declaration of Independence. And some people say, oh, taxation without representation. But that's not what it says. It says taxation without consent. Unless we're talking a democracy, representation doesn't give power to anybody to decide or waive your rights. They're just representing you at a meeting or something. What power do they have? See, a democracy, they may have lots of power. But Jefferson was not really for democracy. Certainly George Washington wasn't. Certainly Patrick Henry wasn't. Certainly John Adams wasn't. You can't even hardly find anybody pro-democracy until you get to people like Karl Marx. So, no, we don't understand what was in the Declaration of Independence. But they did talk about an unwarranted usurpation, seizing a use, the right to use something that was not theirs. And most taxes today in most countries is excise tax, except for fees and things like that. But even then, even those fees are related to excise. Excise tax is tax on the use. If you look up the history of excise tax, which is also known as tribute tax, it's a patrimonial right of kings, rulers. Patrimonial meaning father's right, because governments were referred to as fathers of the people or fathers of the nation. And those fathers, those patrimonial or patronuses, could tax their children because the law of that government was based on the law of the family with the anuitsus, which were the ancient laws of the family. When people were, you know, fathers and mothers were priests and kings in their own home, and their home was their own castle, and their home was a jurisdiction. In order for any other government to enter into that jurisdiction, it must have permission, because every man was and every family was a nation unto itself. And it gathered together as an institution of God. The family could gather together in free assemblies. Even the word church comes from the Greek word ekklesia, which means called out assembly. There's half a dozen words in the Greek that mean assembly. But to use the word ekklesia in reference to what we call the church, they're talking about a called out assembly. And of course, the apostles were called out. These are the ones who are in the world, but not of the world. And the word world there isn't the word for planet. They weren't leaving the planet. They were not of the constitutional order and system of government of men. They were a separate government. If you look in the laws today, if you look in Black's Law Dictionary, the church is defined as established by Jesus Christ as one form of government. But today, most of the ministers of different churches are actually very much of the world. Their retirement is based on the world. Their benefits are based on the world. Their children go to world schools, schools based on, you know, public schools. Christianity was persecuted, as we've explained, in North Africa and in Rome and in different places. They were often persecuted because they were private religion instead of public religion. And the difference between public religion and private religion is where the government collects funds and takes care of the needy of society, widows and orphans of society, in the daily ministration, the daily distribution of bread, free bread. The government does that, then that religion is public, because religion is how you take care of the needy of your society. Public religion is simply religion, a way in which you fulfill your obligation to your fellow man through the public, through a public institution. This is why Temple of Saturn and these other temples, the Parthenos, were used to provide welfare. They had a little building to the side. Temples were actually areas, and there were buildings in those areas, and we sometimes refer to the temple as that building, but it's actually that area, and there's often a little small building there where you went to get your free bread or free cheese or free whatever it was. And that was for the needy of society. And that was public religion. And Christianity came along and it was a private religion. And private religions were legal. It was okay to have a private religion. And Jesus Christ established a private religion through John the Baptist, through the apostles, through the early church that operated by faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty, where people sacrificed, gave charity to their ministers, and their ministers rightly divided the bread from house to house. Herod had done the same thing and offered baptism and registration, and you had to pay into his system once you became a member of that system through consent. and your Corban became a tax. It wasn't a taxation without consent. It was a taxation by your consent because you signed up for the Corban of Herod. And you had to pay in at that time because once you consented, the Sanhedrin could set the amount that you would owe based on what you earned per year, your income. They would actually, if you were a farmer, they would go out to your field and pace it off and calculate the amount of hay or grain or whatever it was you were going to produce. They would count your sheep, and a portion of your sheep had to be paid in, and that was the Corban of the Pharisees. But that makes the word of God to none effect, because it's not a free will offering anymore. But that was public religion, because it was actually enforced by the public law. And it was enforced by the public law because you consented to it. This is why they asked Peter if his master was one who paid the tax, because there were some who had not signed up. It's hard to get a whole nation to sign up for benefits from benefactors who exercise authority. And Jesus was preaching against that. He said it wasn't to be that way with Christians. But they didn't. Many of them had already signed up, so they couldn't do anything about it. So they had to get to the point where the Pharisees said, if you get the baptism of Christ instead of the baptism of Herod, you're cast out of the system set up by the Pharisees and Herod. And you're not going to get any more benefits. But you can leave, but you're out. And of course, they thought when they said this that they were going to be able to oppress the religion, the private religion of Jesus Christ, the church. And they certainly, over the years, tried to do that. Saul tried to do it, oppress the church, punish them, accuse them of misappropriation of funds because they're collecting funds from former members. And of course, that's why Stephen was martyred. But he said, the kingdom of heaven has been here. I see it. I understand it. The problem today is you can't get people to see that the kingdom of heaven is at hand. They think the kingdom of heaven is where you go when you die. Nothing could be farther from the truth. And so the reason they think this, they've been told it, and they've never heard anybody say to the contrary, because it is a strong delusion. But the reality is that you need to repent of that strong delusion, turn around, and go the other way. And people are not going the other way. They are going the way of Nimrod, the way of Cain, the way of Saul, the king. If you're a ruler, the rulers have been corrupted by the power the people gave them. And the people should be ashamed of that power that they've given up, because what they've really given up is their right to choose, their liberty, for a little comfort today. A little security today, what they think is security. But in actuality, they are literally worshiping at the house of the unrighteous mammon, the unrighteous entrusted wealth. Unrighteous because it's based on force. And until John the Baptist, all the governments were establishing themselves and their security systems based on force. You know, you consented, but once you consented, you had to pay in. And so then it wasn't a day-to-day choice, a free will choice. And always with Moses, it had been with a free will choice. You tie to your ministers according to their service. That's what it says. So anyway, if we go back and we look at some of these other people who instituted governments, public religions, so to speak. And there are governments for a number of reasons. You know, I mean, they picked Saul because they wanted somebody to correct the corruption in their court system where men were taking bribes. How did their court system work? Well, this is a very interesting concept, how the court system of Judea, or Israel at that time, worked. And they were organized into these congregations of 10 families. And the 10 families, the minister of those 10 families would pick a minister, and then they would organize into groups of 10, and they would pick a minister. And that's how they organized their whole society. And so if you attacked one corner, information came from that corner through the ministers and through what they called singers that said, we're being attacked. or we had a flood, or we had a fire, or we had a famine, we need help. And people would come there to help because there were bonds of society that compelled them to come. I remember during the war in Spain before World War II, you know, For Whom the Bell Tolls. We know that famous book written by Hemingway, where many Americans went over to fight for the Spanish cause or for the cause of those who were seeking freedom. And of course, it was a strange union because some of the people were not as noble in the cause for fighting as others who came there to fight. So anyway, you end up with these strange connections in society, but in Israel, they had formed these connections based on the law of God, the Ten Commandments, of loving your neighbor and not oppressing the stranger in your midst. That means you couldn't tax the stranger in your midst either, because taxing a man on his labor or on what he produces is oppression. You know, he works and earns and you come along and take. He builds and you come along and take a portion of what he builds. That's oppression. That's force. But people have lived so long in that way, they cannot imagine a society based on love. And yet they think when they die that they will be welcomed into heaven, into some spiritual kingdom. Why? They never learned to live by love here. They didn't learn how to cast their bread upon the waters, how to take care of one another out of faith, hope, and charity. They don't attend to the weightier matters of law, judgment, and mercy, and faith. Somebody else they've given that responsibility to, while they just take care of themselves. Of course, the burdens grow greater and greater on the individual until to repent and turn around and start to form a society based on love becomes almost impossible, completely out of the realm of their ability to even imagine a society based on love, much less implement that society based on being a part of a church. Again, what was that word church? Ecclesia, called out. The Levites were called out to be the church in the wilderness. They went back in, and there's reference to them slain. And it's not really clear what happened there. I know how people translate that, but if you look at some of those Hebrew words and the letters that give meaning to those Hebrew words, I'm not sure we have a clear picture of what was actually going on when they went in and out the gates with the blessing of Moses. Some men followed the Levites. Some Israelites were constantly falling aside along the way as they traveled through that peninsula of Saudi Arabia. Rough terrain. Many would go their own way and did not follow the ways of Moses. But this thinning out produced a character in the people who remained and stuck with it and strive daily, like Christ said, strive. Christ didn't say sit back and just believe. He said strive, seek. These are action words. The devil wants you to think, oh, there's nothing you have to do, just say these magic words and surely you will not die. That's a strong delusion. Somebody was just talking to me on the phone a little bit ago, and they were talking about somebody who came to one of our retreat deals, and they says, so what does HHC have to offer? Offer? You go to church for what you can get? What did Kennedy say? Ask not what you can do for what your country could do for you, but ask rather what you can do for your country. Let's make a distinction here. Government is a bureaucracy. It is an institution of mankind. Even the government of God is an institution of mankind because man is expected to institute it. We should preach the gospel of the kingdom to every creation we institute. The word there, to every creature, actually means the word institutions. The principle of the kingdom, the character of Christ, the name of Christ. The name of Christ is sacrifice, service, love for one another, honesty. That's the character of Christ. That's preaching in his name. If your preacher's not honest, if he's molesting children, if your preacher's doing a lot of things like that, or even a lot less worse, not as bad, that preacher is not operating in the name of Christ, no matter what comes out of his mouth. He's operating according to another character. So let's talk about how the governments of the world and government of God operates, because the Bible's about government. Let's talk about that when we return to Keys of the Kingdom. We'll be right back.
My name is Mark, and I'm from Melbourne in Australia, and I'm a minister in the church established by Jesus Christ more than 2,000 years ago. After reading the books published at hisholychurch.org, I realized that mainstream Christianity had taken a wrong turn by forgetting what Jesus said to do, to practice pure religion while remaining unspotted from the world. What does this mean and how is this done exactly? You'll find out when you go to hisholychurch.org and discover what it truly means to love God and your neighbour as much as yourself. Join the Living Network at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. So we're talking about government, and we're talking about government because we're talking about the Bible, and we're talking about the gospel, and the gospel in the Bible is about government. It mentions religion 5 times. It mentions government hundreds of times. It mentions contracts hundreds of times. It talks about contracts with the gods, which means ruling judges of the places where you go. Yes, you never heard this before. But even though John the Baptist said, have you not heard from the beginning? See, until John the Baptist, people were saying it was okay at that time. They were saying it was okay to force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare. Rome was doing it. Everybody in Rome had gotten used to it. Generations had gone by and they were doing it. Caesar Augustus did it. He wasn't the first to do it, but he did it in a big way. Government dole became more and more popular. And it needed more and more funds. And it needed to take that from more and more people. Judea was following in the footsteps of Augustus, at least since the days of Herod. Of course, if you go back to Hasmoneans, you'll see that they were even shifting the laws around then. But by Herod the Great, he started a scheme just like the Corbin of Rome. Sign up, become a member, and have to pay in according to statutory requirements. But that makes the Word of God to none effect because you're not operating by love. and love is not flowing through you. You're not operating according to the character or name of Christ. You're operating according to the character and name of Nimrod. You're operating according to the character of Babylon. You're operating against the will of God. You have forsaken God. You go to church. You sing songs. You mumble prayers. You repeat them over and over again in some churches. But you don't really do what Jesus said. You're not doers of the word. You're not practicing pure religion. You're practicing false religion. And it feels good for a while. But when it fails, you will not be suitable for more righteous habitations. You will not be received. You will be said, get ye from me, you workers of iniquity, because you haven't been doing what I said. You haven't really loved me. You said you loved me, like the son who said, yes, Father, I will do it, but did not do it. And the other son who said he wasn't going to do it or didn't want to do it, repented and came back and did it. Which one was the true son? Well, you know the answer, and you're not doing it. Everybody who hears these shows should immediately run out and say, how do we form a congregation of record? How do we become a part of a living network? It's not just joining an email group. It's by actually becoming participants in the lives of one another, networking with one another, providing for one another, sacrificing for one another. That's what you get out of HHC. You know, it's like a box of Cracker Jacks. You think you're going to get a candy-coated popcorn and a peanut and a prize? No. You're going to get the opportunity to lay down your life for others. And you get to choose who you're going to lay down your life for. Wow, that's liberty. Liberty under God. Liberty in the name of Christ, in the character of Christ. You haven't been doing that. You need to repent and start doing that. You need to start going the other way, the way of Christ, of loving one another. You need to start doing that. Thomas Jefferson once said, when we get piled upon one another in large cities, as in Europe, we shall become as corrupt as Europe. Wow, Thomas Jefferson said that? You know, I live way out in the country, and there's an attitude and a thought process where many of the people in the country vote a particular way, and they notice that everybody in the cities vote another way. And the cities always win because that's where the piles of people are. Because by living in the cities, their thinking is changed. Now, the people who live out in the country, they think one way. And the people who live in the cities, they think another. But we have people out here in the country that work for the government, Forest Service, BLM, even the public schools. And they seem to think more like the cities because even though they are not in the city, they are piled up with them in their thinking. So their thoughts are not really their own. It's dependent upon their environment and where they are and where they are growing up and learning to think. They're being changed by the structure of their society. So by the system itself. So when Gandhi says resist an evil system with their whole soul, they don't resist it. I've seen where men, their pension was more important than righteousness. The approval of their employer was more important than righteousness. Somebody just told me the other day about a kid who was mauled by a pit bull, small child, I guess, 3-4 years old. I'm not sure what the age was. I didn't read the story, but I just heard about it. And she went into a fast food place, and I won't mention the name because I don't want to give them any kind of promotion or anything. And the whoever was on duty, manager, assistant manager, would not serve the family because the child's face was so badly scarred from the mauling. She had a patch over her eye and scars and all this stuff, it's probably stitches on her face, that she looked kind of scary, you know, because of all these injuries. And I'm sure she'll grow out of it and probably grow up to be a great beauty. But right now, she was a little upsetting to see. It was horrible to see, according to what I was told, what the dog had done to her. So they wouldn't serve her there. And now the company has felt real bad because the story gets out and they've agreed to pay for all the child's medical bills and apology for this store that, this, we call it a store. I worked in franchises before, and they, even though you're feeding people food, they kind of call it a store. But they decided to pay for all those bills because it was such a horrible thing to say, we won't serve you because you're ugly. it was a shocking thing. What they saw changed their attitude, changed their thinking. And what we do, we become used to doing things in a certain way, and we begin to think it's normal and it's okay. It's not okay. Thomas Jefferson also said, democracy will cease to exist when you take away from those who are willing to work and give it to those who would not. I mean, he's like a prophet. He knew that the welfare state was coming. And he wasn't even thinking how radical it is today. He's just talking about general taxation. See, if he had the same moral character, was not succumbed to the influences of modern progressivism, because you can be a genius and still succumb to that. Because this is really a spiritual war. This isn't about the intellect. You can have people very sharp, very intelligent, who are progressive socialists, and people who are very sharp and very intelligent who says that that is absolutely insane to be a progressive socialist, and it will destroy society. And both are very intelligent. Both will score very high on IQ tests, but one can't see it, and one can. They both think they see, but one is wrong, and one is right. Thomas Jefferson also said it is incumbent on every generation to pay its own debts as it goes. A principle which, if acted on, would save one half of the wars of the world. America doesn't do that anymore. It's actually going to be dependent upon the next generation paying its debt. Thomas Jefferson was a bright guy. He was smart. He was clever. He wasn't quite the deist everybody would like him to think. And yes, he did marry one of his slaves. It was actually his wife's maid, who was a very close and personable individual. And he didn't marry her until his wife had passed away. There was no liaison affairs. And eventually produced, generations later, they produced a fellow by the name, I think, of William Jefferson Blythe, who some people have believed that was the father of Bill Clinton, but was not. But that's another story. Can't reveal all the secrets. But the point is, Jefferson was very bright. I mean, he could actually write Greek and Latin at the same time, one with his right hand and one with his left hand, translating something somebody was saying in English all simultaneously. That's sharp. I mean, ambidextrous, I have a son who can write with both hands, but not at the same time, and not Greek in one hand and Latin in the other. So he was just very intelligent, and he had a lot of good education. He was a very perceptive individual, very, very intelligent individual. Was he right about everything? No, because there are very intelligent individuals who are wrong about everything. They're right intellectually, but their conclusion is much different, even with the same facts. So it isn't intellect that's really the answer. Although intellect is a valuable asset, it can also be a terrible burden, because you, with a great deal of intellect and the praise that often goes along with it, people will begin to think that they actually know what they're talking about, because everybody says, well, you do, you have degrees. But no matter how many degrees you have, it's still just a degree of knowledge. Truth is actually a spiritual recognition. Thomas Jefferson also said, I predict future happiness for America if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people under the pretense of taking care of them. And of course, that's what you see, huge amounts. I mean, the governments of the world are pretty good at taking care of the needy of their society. No one can say that widows and orphans are not receiving a check monthly in their time of need. But I can also point out that drug addicts and immoral leeches and irresponsible, self-serving individuals are also receiving a check and lazily doing nothing and being a burden on society, driving up the debt of society simply because they're slothful and lazy. Because like he was talking about, that being responsible Every generation should be responsible for their own debt and the payment of that debt. But today, we don't do that. We leave it for the next generation to pay. Because we don't love our neighbor. We don't love the next generation as much as we love our own comfort. So, he predicted the future happiness of America if they can prevent the government from wasting the labors of the people. And they do when they provide benefits for the immoral. They actually breed immorality. They breed the Antichrist. And then they all get government jobs, those that will work. And they bring that spirit with them. Tom also said, my reading of history convinces me that most bad governments results from too much government. In other words, it's just another way of saying power corrupts. He also said, no free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms. Because they all knew that the right to bear arms was an obligation. And free people would not be limited in their right to bear arms by any means. You couldn't say you could have this gun, but not that gun. As soon as you can do that, why not say, well, you can't have that gun either? It's only a matter of time. The direction and the spirit is clear. He said the strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is as a last resort to protect themselves against the tyranny in government. That's why you have it. George Washington said something very similar. I'm just picking on Thomas Jefferson. Somebody sent me a lot of quotes from Tom, and he has a lot of good quotes. He said the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. The blood of patriots and tyrants. Let's hope it's more the blood of the tyrants than of the patriots. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have violent revolution. That's not really what that's about, violent revolution. Violent revolution would lead us to think that there is an answer in taking up the sword. But that would be resisting evil. One of the things about resisting evil, I mean, if you look at the definition of the word resist, and the third person present, resist, past tense, resisted, past participles, all these different ways in which it's used, it means to withstand the action or effect. Like antibodies help us resist infection. It also means to try to prevent by either action or argument, something from taking place. To resist means to succeed in ignoring the attraction of something, wrong or otherwise. Such as a woman saying they resisted his advances. They ignored them. So we're not to either overtly take action against evil, as if pitting ourselves, taking a stand against evil by pitting ourselves against evil on the same level upon which evil, you know, if they want to come and take by force, we're supposed to fight back by force. Well, we might have a case for that if we had not consented. Because, see, it's not really evil government if it's fulfilling the terms of the contract. And the contract is, I will take away from your neighbor, and I will provide you with welfare if you give me the power to take away from your neighbor. But let it be known that if you give me the power to take away from your neighbor, you can only do this if you also give me the power to take away from you. And of course, that's exactly what people have done. And now they take and take and take and take and take. But if you go back and read Samuel 8, that's what you were told in the Bible about religion and government would happen when you follow that way, which is not the way of Christ. It is the antithesis of the way of Christ. Is it in opposition to the way of Christ? But anyway, to resist is also defined as to struggle against someone or something. And the fact is, do you have to struggle against the darkness? Or do you just need the light? That's ultimately what we need to understand, is that we need the light. We need the truth. The truth shall set you free. So when I was talking about what Thomas Jefferson was saying in relationship to the blood of patriots and tyrants, we can look at that word patriot. And if you actually look it up, it means a person who vigorously supports their country and is prepared to defend it against enemies or detractors. If you actually Google the word patriot, the first thing you'll see is something about a football team named the Patriots. But the reality is this idea of supporting your country. Country, again, is not your government. It's the land where you are. To support the nation, that's the people. To support the bureaucracy, that's another thing. You see, our loyalty should always be to righteousness. If somebody signed a contract, they owe the debt. If they haven't signed the contract, then they may not owe the debt. But this idea that the government doesn't have a right to take from the people is ridiculous. It has an obligation to take from the people, especially those people who have signed up to obtain benefits. Now, if somebody had no contract with them and were literally, in essence, a foreigner, they may not be able to take every tax. That's why the man says, "Does your master pay the tax?" Everybody doesn't have to pay it. But if we look at this word patriot, it's a person who vigorously supports their country, it says. But where does it come from? You know, the Greek patriotes, like idiotes. Idiotes is someone who has not registered. Or idiotes is someone who is registered. Not idiotes is someone who is not registered. And if you register, you're registering what? You're choosing a new father. I mean, the word patrios means one father. Patronus means our father. Patris means fatherland. So, and one should obey their father. And of course, that's what they're really talking about, is obeying your father, your natural father, and if not your natural father, your public father, who provides for your religion, for your welfare, by taking away from your neighbor. And of course, you're okay with that covetous practice of taking away from your neighbor, and therefore, they can also take away from you. As Thomas Jefferson also said, to compel a man to subsidize with his taxes the propagation of ideas which he disbelieves, and abhors even, is sinful and tyrannical. Well, most of what they teach in public schools, I would probably disagree with, especially in history, if they taught any history. But this is common now. We commonly accept it. He was clearly an adamant against the idea. Now we even subsidize abortion, which people find absolutely immorally reprehensible. But it's okay to force your neighbor to contribute to your abortion, because we've gone away from the principles of Thomas Jefferson. He said, "I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around the bank will deprive the people of all property." This is way back. He was saying this. He says, until the children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered. Thomas Jefferson knew this. Well, that's actually what's happened. If you read The Covenants of the God free online, we give all our books away free online. You don't have to sign up for anything. You don't even have to give us email. You can just go there and do a search for the name of the book, and there it is. And you read the whole thing as a PDF. But this is what he's saying. Let's read that again. If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around the banks will deprive the people of all property until their children wake up homeless on a continent their fathers conquered. What's he talking about? You don't own your house. You have a legal title. Legal title does not include the beneficial interest, the right to use the property. If you want to use the property, you must pay the use tax. Stop paying the use tax for a few years and they take the whole house away from you. You don't own it. You're renting. you have to pay the use tax or you don't get to keep it. You've done the same with your labor. You've gone back into bondage. We explain this all in detail in the book Covenants of the Gods. Had some of the top lawyers in the United States look at this and say things like, you're right, but they're not going to like you. I'm telling you the truth. You see, I could start a church real easy if I had no conscience that would tickle your ears, and you could come and say, what will this church do for me? And I'll say, we'll make you feel good. We got a great band. We got great comfortable pews. We got actually, you know, theater chairs, and you come and we'll make you feel like you're saved and you'll feel good. We could do that. We could make lots of money at that. It would kill me spiritually, but if I was inclined, I guess I could do it. I know how to do it, but my heart's not in it. So I really couldn't do it. But that's what you go to church for, is to feel good. Oh, they want you to have some kind of moral code so that you feel, you know, it's more convincing that you're good. Or they'll tell you you don't even have to be good. You just have to say you believe, and then you'll be comforted to know that you're going to heaven. Even though Paul, who they depend on heavily, says if you do this, there's no place for you in the kingdom of heaven. You don't seem to care about that. Your preachers aren't going to mention that. That's not a good tithe maker. I wrote an article and put it on our daily thoughts, and I got calls from pastor fellow and from other people thought it was really good. I didn't think it was the best I had done, but it must have been something they were ready to hear. But I started off misconceptions in our thoughts of the day. From tiny misconceptions, great misunderstandings may grow, and this is exactly what happens, because you lose sight of some of the basic fundamentals of the gospel. You can get an extremely distorted view. Like, for instance, citizenship. We think of citizen as if they are all the same, but they are not. All citizens are not the same. There's different kinds of citizenship. And we read translations and we make assumptions about people like Paul, for instance. He says his citizenship was in Rome, according to what you imagine that it says there in the Bible. Was Paul a Roman citizen or was he free? We have a link there where you can look at, was Paul a Roman? Was Paul a Roman citizen? Actually, Paul was not a Roman citizen. He was Romeos, which does have to do with his status and his citizenship, but it wasn't the kind of citizenship most Romans enjoyed. As a matter of fact, at that time, almost very few Romans enjoyed the status of Romeos, and you even see it in the conversation right there in the Bible text that the head of the cohort had to pay a great sum for the citizenship he enjoyed, when we know by law that anyone who was even just a centurion would get Roman citizenship automatically as a soldier of Rome. But he wasn't talking about Roman citizenship. He was talking about Romeos, which was a particular status where you were in possession of your rights. It was a status of being sui juris in natural law. But most of you don't know that. Now, a good scholar in law and language could easily decipher the same thing. And we have an article there where you can read it and you can look it up for yourself. But people are amiss in this, and they don't understand how this works. And so they're misled. They don't even know why Paul was appealing his case. I mean, he won his case, but he's still appealing it. Why? Well, we'll have to talk about that next time on Keys to the Kingdom. Until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.